Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we speak with writers about writing. I am thrilled and honored to have my guest, Edward Carey, here today. How are you doing, Edward?
Very well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
I cannot believe you're here. I'm so excited. I think you're amazing, and I'm going to give you a brief introduction right now so everyone else can figure out why I'm so thrilled. Edward Carey is a novelist, visual artist, and playwright. His previous novels include The Swallowed Men, Little Alva and Irva, and Observatory Mansions, and an acclaimed series for young adults, the Ironmonger trilogy. And I practiced that, Ironmonger. That's what it is, right, Ironmonger?
Yeah.
Some of your titles are a little like, they seem intuitive, but I'm like, am I saying this right? His writing for the stage includes an adaptation of Robert Hoover's Pinocchio in Venice, continuation of the Pinocchio story. He was born in England, and now he teaches at the University of Texas in Austin, where he lives with his wife, the author Elizabeth McCracken, and their family. So there's two writers in your house. That must be fun.
Marvelous. I recommend it for everybody. No, it's actually great. We're each other's first readers, and we rely on each other to give honest opinion. And actually, we've now got to a situation where we hide each other's books from each other. So we don't tell each other what we're writing until we have a draft. So years in, you know, we don't say, and then suddenly we have a whole draft and say, will you read this in 5 minutes, please?
That's so cool, though. That's such a cool method that you have going on. That's like, shows a lot about your marriage, too, I think. keeping, you know, have to have a little mystery going on, too. Is there any kind of, there's no competition. Do you write pretty different sorts of things, yes? Or is it?
Yeah,
there's no weirdness there.
We're not in competition. There are many, many writers in the world. So having you know two in one household is not any big deal. You know, so no. In an ideal world, we're not publishing at the same time just because of dealing with children. But otherwise, yeah, no.
Absolutely. Well, that's very good. I just can't imagine what it's like at your house. So today we're here to talk about your newest book, Edith Holler. So can you tell us a little bit about this book?
So this was a book that I wrote in the pandemic, and it's set in 1901 in England, in a city called Norwich, which is near where I was born. And I was missing home. I went through the pandemic in Austin. I was missing home enormously, and I was missing theatre. Of course, there was no theatre during COVID. And the English government were behaving appallingly with the theatres, and theatres were closing all the time. And I went, I want to write a book about a theatre and from a young person's point of view. And I wanted to imagine this wonderful theatre. And the theatre that's in the book is based on the first theatre I used to go to as a child. And so I sort of summoned that back up. It's a story about a young woman who discovers something terrible is going on in her city. And she decides to put this information into a play, and eventually the play is performed. There's a play within the play, and there's a lot of folklore. There's some very nasty characters in the novel, but it's about the young finding their voice and standing up against a sort of oppression of adult society.
Yes, and it's been very well received. Just reading the reviews are wonderful. My first question, this is sort of based off of what you just said. The book has been praised by many as a modern masterpiece. I've been reading all these wonderful, and I couldn't agree more. And it draws on so many of your own backgrounds and influences, the playwright specifically, your childhood, your growing up, and you could see that you tapped into a lot of those. But what was the initial inspiration to write this? You just said it was COVID, but was there a spark of like this idea came to you fully formed, or did you just start with one part of the idea? How did it all develop for you?
I've known for years that I wanted to write a play set inside a theater, but I couldn't have access to it. Just before COVID started, I was in London, and you know, suddenly the world collapsed very quickly, didn't it? And we all had to sort of run for shelter, and I rushed back to London to be with my family. But the last meeting I had before you know the world shut down was with this incredible artist called Clive Hicks Jenkins, and he's amazing. You know, he's an incredible illustrator, but one of the things things that he creates, and one of the things that he's obsessed about are toy theatres, like Victorian toy theatres. And they're a wonderful game. Robert Louis Stevenson has written this most amazing essay about them. And I thought, how would it be to have actually a toy theatre within a novel? So that the novel is illustrated with bits of toy theatre, so that you could actually theoretically cut the novel out and build the toy theatre from it. And so the inspiration from this was fleeing my beloved London, alas, but speaking to this wonderful illustrator and him giving me this sort of flint of an idea before I rushed back and went undercover.
Well, I'm glad that all happened. So we have this beautiful piece of artwork, because it's really, the book is a piece of art too. There's glorious illustrations throughout. And you're an artist as well, as you have too many things. You're good at too many things. It's getting annoying. That was my second question. Your artwork is stunning. The artwork in yours is stunning throughout the book. Did the story or the artwork come, like, how did the artwork flow? Was it the story come first and then the art, or did the art influence the story? Can you kind of expand on that?
For me, every book I've ever, this is my ninth book, and I always illustrate the characters in my book. I feel I can't know them if I can't see them. It's also a wonderful way of not writing, or, you know, looking for excuses everywhere, but pretending it's useful, and it is useful. But so for me, I have to draw the characters to know them. I'm English, as you can tell from my Texas accent, we're fed Charles Dickens in England as if it was a sort of medicine, cod liver oil or something like that. And Dickens was so brilliant about describing his characters, about knowing them physically. And I think that got into me at a young age, and I need to know what my characters look like. So I always draw them. And so right from the start, the first drawing, when I'd only had a couple of pages, was the sort of toy theatre illustration of Edith Holler herself, the heroine, the narrator of this book. And from that, everything followed. But for me, as I go through writing a book, I write and illustrate at the same times, and the writing and the illustrate sort of argue with each other. And I have to try and get that right, you know, so that they agree with each other. But some stepping away and visualizing a character will change the text, and the text will also change the drawing, and slowly they build up with each other.
That's awesome. Well, your displacement non-writing activity is actually beneficial to your work. Mine is always just like rearranging the spices or folding sweaters or something like that. So at least yours is something that's
we need those non-writing moments. They're very, very important.
They are. I think everyone seems to have those, but it has to be the way that your brain just takes a break. And yeah, I think ideas do come to you in the shower for a reason, because you can't be writing at that moment, but you get these flashes of inspiration washing the dishes. So.
Yeah. And Hilary Mantel, I read an interview of her with her recently, and she was saying 2 good hours a day. That's it.
That's good. That's good. That's really good. And it's achievable.
And I thought, okay. yeah.
Well, I mean, anything she says, we'll just go, okay, that's exactly what it should be. We'll just do what she says, because she's a brilliant genius.
Yes.
Edith is so interesting. So for those that are coming to the book, she just has this very unique childhood. She's not being abused or anything. It's just very unique childhood. Let's just put it that way. She's isolated, things like that. She's so interesting and has such a strange upbringing. It's sort of like you're taking her out of the real world. Was that the intention? And how did you come about this concept of keeping her in this strange upbringing? Why did that come to you as part of her character?
So to be slightly more specific with the strange upbringing, is she's not allowed to leave the theater. She has to stay in the theater. She's condemned by a curse among actors that she has to stay inside the theater, that if she leaves the theater will fall down. It's a curse. Do we believe it? We don't know, but theater people are very suspicious. And it seems also that her father is doing this to draw attention to the theater to make money. And so we don't quite know the truth of it, but she utterly believes it. She's born in that world of theatre. And I think the world of theatre is so extraordinary, because you can have on a stage anything. you can suddenly travel anywhere. You know, the play is also obsessed with Shakespeare. And Shakespeare brings dead people back to life. Theatre does that all the time. You can have imaginary places in it. And so she's a character that was born of dreams. And suddenly reality starts to bite because her father marries a businesswoman and things start to change inside the theatre. But to imagine that world when you can't go out anywhere, and as I said, I wrote this during COVID, and so this was my direct response to it. This is her, where you have to imagine worlds then. We all had to do that during COVID. We all had to find, you know, new places. Oh, look, here's a corner in my house I haven't visited for 5 minutes. You know, there's this wonderful book by Xavier de Maistre, this French writer, who wrote this book called A Voyage Around My Room, which is a tourist guide to his room, to the room he was under house arrest. So he thought he would write a tourist guide to where he's living. And so it's inspired, Edith Holland is inspired by that and her imagination, how she can travel with her imagination. But she begins to understand reality, the reality of outside starts creeping in, and she starts to put it into a play. And this brings about all sorts of terrible reactions in the novel.
Absolutely. And there is something with isolation and madness kind of go hand in hand. And they're, you know, it's excellent. So you're talking about that room. I was thinking of Yellow Wallpaper, that short story where that, you know, the woman is going mad upstairs. But yeah, it's all very, we all were going a bit mad.
yeah, we're going totally mad. And in Norwich, the city that this is set, I find it's quite extraordinary. I didn't know this until I'd done some research, that the Theatre Royal, as it was, as it came to be called, is directly opposite a mental hospital.
Wow.
And it's the two extraordinary, the way that those two buildings actually talk to each other was sort of devastating, I thought, and fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've all been through a collective trauma. I don't know, we're not all over it. I mean, anyone's over it yet. We're all still dealing with,
I've just been boosted, have you? I mean,
yes, you got to. I mean, yep. This all became part of our language too. I mean, I've never expected, I'm Gen X, I'm 52. I never thought I would go through anything like that. Who knows, you know, what we're supposed to do. But then I was like, oh, it happens every 100 years, which is where unfortunate it happened to me, it happened to all of us, but right. You just sort of become something else on the other side of things like that. So that's just, it's fascinating. And the fact that you captured it in art that we'll always have forever in some ways. Not that we won't always have it, but you know what I mean? We'll be able to reflect on it.
But what else was there to do during the, you had to do something during the pandemic. The other thing I did was for 500 days, I did a drawing a day and posted it on social media. And so I was, you know, just doing that right drawing to whatever happened. Like, you remember that fly that landed on Mike Pence's head during the vice presidential debates? I drew that fly, for example. You know, you remember the day when Rudy Giuliani started sort of dripping black down his hair? I drew that. Or other times I drew birds in England that I was missing. Suddenly birds became important during the pandemic. Or I drew writers I love when it was their birthdays, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow, that's cool. I'm gonna go find those. That's awesome. I definitely remember those events. As well as we're gonna do. Well, speaking of you being overly talented in many areas, you are a playwright as well, an established playwright. And this book, in some ways, combines the two things that we were talking about, the two disciplines. How different is it from writing a novel versus writing a play? Is it a lot different for as a writer? We talk about that craft on the show. Is it harder, easier, faster?
Well, I mean, they're different beasts. I've done less and less theatre work recently just because, because of pandemic, of course. But I've worked with a puppet master in Malaysia, and I've worked with theatre companies in Lithuania and in Romania. And I love theatre. I was kind of, it was sort of my first love. But the thing with theatre is it's expensive. And you are restricted. You can generally, you know, if you want your play to be put on, you might be restricted to having about 2.5 actors. Wow. and the half might be an acting stage manager. So you know, when the plays that I really wanted to write had huge budgets and enormous casts and were horrendously expensive, with monsters coming on stage, and I put that in the book because that's a sort of, you know, full budget production. But I realized, I just, when I wrote my first novel, I began to understand the freedom you have. You have a very different freedom with writing prose, with writing a novel, say, is that you can go anywhere. You can have such an enormous cast. You can do anything, span hundreds of years, have thousands of actors, crazy monsters, and it won't cost you a thing. And it's just you and the piece of paper. And suddenly, so actually that transition to for me, writing prose was just like release. I could do anything. It was just like given permission. I could go anywhere. I didn't have to worry about any limitations. However, I would say at the same time, when you see a piece of theater that's fantastic live, you're there, it's better than anything in the world.
Yeah, I lived in New York for a long time, and that was one of the best parts of living there. It's just going, you know, you had access to the very best of theater, you know, at any time. Not that I had the budget in my 20s to go to everything, but I could have gone. But I mean, the fact that I could go was I had to live with that. But I did see some really cool productions when I got a little bit older and had some more cash coming in. But yeah, theater is amazing, and everyone should. I think it's so cool that you are so versatile in your writing. I think that's just, it's just fascinating to me. When I like it when people shift from short story to a novel, you know, I just always think it's fascinating to hear about how people come to their process and their passions. It's fascinating to me. Oh, we're at the fifth question. It's always sad. I'm always like, I could talk to you all day. What would you like people to take away from reading this book? We've talked about the general themes, isolation, the pandemic. What would you like for people maybe that are reading it in the future years to take away from this novel?
Well, I hope it has a wonderful leading character. I adore her, and I should, because I've written her. If I don't, there's a real problem there. But it's about a person finding their voice. It is a coming of age story, but in a dangerous time. It was written, it's set in 1901, just after Queen Victoria died. And that, for me, reflects the death of Queen Elizabeth II, but also the death of the UK because of Brexit and everything that's happened to it. I do think it's a political book under that, but it also has tons of ghosts in it. And there are many, many children who get eaten in this novel. And there are strange creatures. And there is there's a lot of folklore, and there's a lot of beetles. So I wanted to pour in like a sort of grand guignol piece of theatre, but also for it to hopefully be entertaining and funny in places and very dark in places, but also to have, you know, a very serious look at how the young are being shut out by our politicians and destroyed as the planet goes to hell, and how they don't care. And the young are just left with just an awful situation.
Yes.
And they want to stand up. So.
Yeah.
That's what is under the book.
I can definitely see all of that. It's a book like no other. It's a very unique experience to read it, to even just to look at it. It'd be, you know, just to stare at it. It's so gorgeous. But there is a dark wit there. There are so many different things. I just want to know what it's like to live inside your mind for a minute. I'm getting a little taste of it, and it's just wonderful. But thank you so much for enlightening us with these answers to these compelling, I hope, questions. I think the answers are more compelling than the questions, actually. I should change the name of the show. But what is going on with you next? Are you going on tour? Are you working on the next book? What are we
going to look for? I'm doing, you know, bits and pieces for the book. I'm teaching at the moment, so I'm sort of juggling that. And right now I'm doing a drawing a day until Halloween, which is the day that the book comes out, of folklore, of creatures and characters from folklore. I'm 200 pages into another novel, and I get to go to Turin, Italy in November, December, because I did a short story that's been made into a little film, and it's up for the Turin Film Festival. So that's me.
That is so cool. That is so exciting. Oh my gosh. Well, I hope it wins. Well, it's a festival, so I hope everyone loves it. I'm sure they will. You're so well-rounded. You have like a visual, you're a visual writer, you're a literary writer, you're funny, and you're charming, and you're a professor. Like, I mean, you need to slow down. Well, thank you again. Enjoy everything. And everyone needs to run out and get Edith Haller. It is, and it's a perfect timing to get it for this time of year to read and enjoy. And thank you again. I hope I get to see you again on the show or sometime. Oh, maybe I get to see you in real life someday.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You too.